So there is a Unitarian minister you might have heard of. He's a little famous. He was a poet, and he was an essayist, and he's the namesake of my son. His name is Ralph Waldo Emerson. We've heard of him, right? Has said that you can be certain of one thing in life, and that is that people, you and I, will worship something. Now, worship, you know that I love words, right? Worship, it comes from a Gaelic word, meaning to assign worth or value to something. People say to me sometimes, Nathan, what do we worship here if we don't all agree in the same God or the lack of a God or the same idea of prayer? What do we worship? But Emerson says that you and I will find something to worship. Some will worship fame. I'm thinking of Charlie Sheen. Others will worship ego. Others will worship money. Others will worship their job. You can fill in a blank. All the kinds of choices we have to worship or give value to something. And what Emerson says is that the value of and the role of a church community like this one is to help you and I focus and think about what we want to give worth or value to, what we want to worship. And now I'm thinking of how we say that we worship the sanctity of life, how we say that there is worth in all of us, in you and me, in every person in the world, and how we value a community like this that holds us and welcomes us for who we are, that we don't have to think alike to love alike. This is what we worship. And basically, the question that Emerson is asking us is, how does my faith, my Unitarian Universalist faith, help me and help you live in the world outside these walls? So I have my own answers to these questions, but you get to hear from me most every Sunday. So this morning, I have given this question to two of us. We had two youth, and Daryl Bryans, who is the youth group leader, but Cheryl Peralt, her daughter, Abby, came down with strep throat last night, so she is not here with us. But we have Hallie Barton, and we have Daryl with their answers.
Hi. So, how does being Unitarian help me to live in the world? Well, I think that being Unitarian helps me in many different ways. It helps me to know exactly what I want to stand for and believe in as a person. Being Unitarian helped me to understand that love and happiness are the most important things to life for me. I am one of those people who can't watch any of my friends or even strangers cry without tearing up myself. What can I say? I'm a sap and a romantic. I need to believe that at the end of the day, there's going to be someone to love me and hold me. What I hate the most is feeling like you don't belong and like you're a misfit. So when I hear about all these young people committing suicide because they're gay or being bullied, I get disgusted. Remember the story of Tyler Clementi, the young man attending Rutgers University whose roommate put a video on the internet of Clementi having a sexual encounter with another man. A couple of days later, Tyler jumped off the George Washington Bridge. I was so upset, and I still am, because nobody was there for Tyler. I mean, who was there to stand up to his roommate, Darun Ravi? Who was there for Tyler to make sure that he was okay, and to tell him that they loved him for who he was? And who was there to stand by Tyler, to stop him from jumping off the bridge? No one was. My Uncle Jamie came out as being gay a long time ago, but even before, it was very obviously that he was, although my dad just thought he was artsy. When he was only a teenager, he was walking home in New Haven by the Yale campus. A bunch of Yale football players began to call him names such as homo and others that I can't say in the middle of church. Then they beat him really badly, so that he had to go to the hospital and the police had to get involved. I know that at least one of the boys was suspended from Yale for a semester and that they had to write my uncle apology letters. That story always appalls me, how some people just aren't accepting at all, to the point where they beat someone up because they're gay or because they're being who they are. I've never been able to understand why people can just be so mean to each other. I grew up in a family and environment that was so accepting of everybody. My mom always encouraged me to be as genuine as I could be and to love and accept everyone. I grew up with a gay uncle, so when I was in eighth grade and a boy said that he hated all gay people, and thought that it was morally wrong, I was really confused. I didn't know that some people thought that it was wrong to be gay and that it was a sin. I didn't get it because people should be who they are, and I didn't know who was telling everyone that it was wrong to love somebody, even if they're the same gender. When I found out that people were hating gay people because of religion, I was really disgusted. I believe that religion should teach others to love everybody for being who they are, and that's what I take from Unitarianism. When my friend asks me what the heck Unitarianism is, I tell them that it's a church where everyone is accepted and loved for who they are, and that it lets you develop your own beliefs and character. And the minute that you walk through the doors of the church, you enter an atmosphere of love and unity. What I think the best part of the church is the youth group, because it's the most accepting place that I've ever been to. I mean, high school is really rough. People are always trying to be someone who they're not just to fit in. But in our youth group, there's no cliques or popular crowds. We just have people who probably wouldn't be friends with each other in any different context because we're all so different. We all have different interests and different friends. But when we're in the youth group, we all get to know each other and we all love each other.
Good morning. I'm Darrell Bryans, one of the three senior youth group advisors. I recently read an excellent new biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German Protestant pastor and theologian. Prior to receiving the book, I had never heard of Bonhoeffer and his incredible life and unshakable Christian faith. Had I, I'm a little embarrassed to say, it's likely the book would still be on my nightstand because frankly I equate unshakable Christian faith with evangelicals, born-again Christians, and others of deep faith with whom I'm usually uncomfortable. Maybe it's because I'm an atheist, and I assume that they will belittle my belief since God clearly exists for them, and so it must for me as well. Or maybe it's something about their profound faith, which, because I don't have a similar deep faith, that makes me uncomfortable. But this book and this man's life opened my eyes to something I hadn't considered. It opened my eyes to what faith might mean to me. One of Bonhoeffer's quotes that most struck me is this: "Do not try to make the Bible relevant. Its relevance is axiomatic. Do not defend God's word, but testify to it. Trust to the word." Could this be so? Could the Bible's relevance be axiomatic, a given in the scientific sense, something that need not be proven? That concept opened my eyes, not necessarily to the fact that it might be true, although I feel now more curious to read the Bible than I ever have, but if nothing else, Bonhoeffer's absolute confidence that it be true, his unwavering belief, his faith, which is so admirable, so enviable to someone like me. And maybe even more striking to me was to learn how Bonhoeffer lived his values, how he lived his faith. Although he's considered one of the most important theologians of the 20th century, for Bonhoeffer, there was little value in theology in the abstract. He lived his values and faith in a way that was unheard of to me, entirely submissive to the will of God. Some of you may hold such clear, absolute, and steadfast beliefs, or you may know of others of different faiths who do, but I do not. As naive as it may sound, I was not aware that there are those who are so devout and so clear that they could say, as Bonhoeffer did as he made his way to the gallows, "This is the end, for me the beginning of life." And I have no doubt that he meant it. So this book opened my eyes to the concept of faith and living one's faith, which brings me back to our church here. I wonder if I would be open to this concept 4 years ago before I started coming to this church. Probably not. It's the spirit and openness of this church, I think, that provides me a context in which I can consider this type of faith and begin my own journey of discovering what faith means to me. Not as well known about Bonhoeffer is his work with children, youth, and the youth ministry, which brings me back to today's theme, the senior youth group. At the age of 22, Bonhoeffer went to Barcelona for a year where he took on his first ministry role to run the children's service and fill in for the pastor while he was on vacation. And although the full-time minister had sent notifications that the young Bonhoeffer was coming, for his first week's sermon, only one child showed up. However, word quickly spread, and the next week, 15 showed up. And the week after and subsequent weeks, at least 30 children attended. A large number, considering only about 40 adults attended the weekly sermons. As bright and devoted and serious as Bonhoeffer was, he was great with youth. A couple of years later, at the age of 25, Bonhoeffer was assigned a confirmation class in a notoriously tough part of Berlin. According to the author of his autobiography, quite unlike the cherubs Bonhoeffer had taught in Harlem, he now faced a veritable gang of sawed-off hoodlums. He had been duly warned, but nothing could have prepared him for what lay ahead. The 14 and 15-year-old miscreants were so famously misbehaved and had so expertly harassed the minister Bonhoeffer was replacing that no sooner had Bonhoeffer taken over the class than the exasperated old fellow died, skipped off to that great confirmation class in the sky. Bonhoeffer was seriously convinced that the frail man's health failed chiefly as a result of this ungovernable class. A student and friend described Bonhoeffer's first encounter with the class. The elderly minister and Bonhoeffer slowly walked up the stairs of the school building, which was several stories high. The children looked down on them from over the banisters, making an indescribable din and dropping refuse on the two men descending the stairs. When they reached the top, the minister tried to force the throng back into the classroom by shouting and using physical force. He tried to announce that he had brought them a new minister who was going to teach them in the future, and his name was Bonhoeffer. And when they heard the name, they started shouting, "Bon, Bon, Bon," louder and louder. The old man left the scene in despair, leaving Bonhoeffer standing silently against the wall with his hands in his pockets. Minutes passed. His failure to react made the noise gradually less enjoyable, and he began speaking quietly so that only the boys in the front row could catch a few words that he said. Suddenly, all were silent. Bonhoeffer merely remarked that they had put up a remarkable initial performance and went on to tell them a story about Harlem. If they listened, he told them, he would tell them more the next time. And then he told them they could go. After that, he had never had a reason to complain about the lack of attentiveness. I wish I could do that. Not that the senior youth group is quite that rambunctious, but it might come in handy once in a while, and it would certainly help out with my kids. I get a lot of little things from the senior youth group. For one, I don't have to do RE and miss a bunch of sermons. True story, that's why I joined the senior youth group. I thought it would be easier than RE. Oh well, turns out I was wrong, but on the other hand, I haven't regretted a minute. I especially enjoy that I get to know the parents of the senior youth group, especially those that go on the New Orleans trips. Most of the deep connections I have with members of this congregation are the result of late night talks in New Orleans. People like Peter Ainsworth and Paula Angel, Kate Holland, Jeff Barton, Mary Ansell, Gary Leonard, and Cheryl Perrault, all wonderful people and great parents, and most likely not know so well if it hadn't been for the senior youth group trips to New Orleans. I also get to act like a kid, which is good because it's not a stretch role for me. Ask around, who is the UUAC reigning champion of wheelbarrow full of clay sprinting? And who is the reigning champion for barefoot 50-yard dash? I'll give you a hint, it's not Max Tybel. And of course, I also get to experience the vitality, the talent, the passion, and emotion that each of the youth brings, each in their unique, beautiful way. Yes, I'm thankful for all these things I get from the senior youth group, although as often as not, I forget to be. Sometimes I want to be like Bonhoeffer, or maybe Nathan, or Peter Gormley, or anyone who has a talent that I don't, or a deep faith that I don't. But I'm consoled by something Bonhoeffer said. He wrote, "We think we dare not be satisfied with the small measure of spiritual knowledge, experience, and love that has been given us, and that we must constantly be looking forward eagerly for the highest good. Then we deplore the fact that we lack the deep certainty, the strong faith, and the rich experience that God has given others, and we consider this lament to be pious. We pray for the big things, and we forget to give thanks for the ordinary, small, and yet not really small gifts. Only he who gives thanks for the little things receives the big things. I am indeed thankful for all the things I receive by being part of the senior youth group."